I had a conversation with an executive that I really like, respect, and I think it's cool and everything. He's like, dude, you can't do Spanglish. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, you're gonna ruin her career. I went to New York, literally went to New York, sat down with Stu, and this meeting in like this like giant office, right? And I'm like, yo, Stu, can you help me get Jason Derulo on the record?
Yeah. Well, in Madrid, it was like 10,000. In Barcelona, it was like 30,000.
It was like,
people.
Oh,
and
wow.
Everyone was singing the song so loud.
We didn't know that was happening.
Oh, they knew it.
They had no idea that was happening.
Today's Latin music charts are dominated by artists like Bad Bunny, Karol G, and Shakira. Artists who've remained loyal to the Spanish language, but have also embraced a new way of speaking, Spanglish. Yet even 10 years ago, songs that mixed both languages were difficult to find on the market or even produce. When Paloma Hecht and Charlie Guerrero saw this, they thought this was a miss. U.S. Latino audiences would listen to Spanglish music, they thought. In 2010, they met who they believed could pave the way. Then a teenager, Mexican singer Sofia Reyes, was part of a girl group. But her vocal chops, lyricism, and full bilingualism won the duo over. Paloma, Charlie, and Sofia moved to a small apartment in Los Angeles to launch Sofia's career. Today, Sofia Reyes is a Latin American Music Award Female Artist of the Year. Has recorded chart-topping songs with Sean Paul, Wisin, Jason Derulo, and Dana Paola. Paloma and Charlie joined Business School today to tell us how they went from a career in graphic design to one in music management, how a disastrous client opened their doors to the world of music, and how they plan to keep infusing the Spanish and English music space with their company, Myth Media. Plus, they answer questions from small businesses around the country. I'm journalist Fernando Hurtado, and on Business School, I'm on a mission to map one of the fastest growing groups of entrepreneurs in the United States, Latinos. We're tracking how they got started, found success, and the most important lessons they've learned along the way. And remember, Business School is expensive. Business School is free.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
All right, Paloma and Charlie, welcome to Business School. How are you guys?
Yay! Applausos.
Applausos, a live audience.
Yes, live audience applause.
We're good. Tired, I'm not going to lie. It's been a really interesting year.
I think one thing we have to set up right away is that you guys have worked together for a long time, in part because you guys are married.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So how did you guys meet?
It was a coincidence, bro. Like we met 16 years ago, like the next year we're gonna be 17 years. Uh-huh. Jesus Christ. We met in Cuernavaca, like through several friends. We met at a club, which if you know
us, that's a salsa club.
Yeah, salsa club. Like, and if you know what you like, but yeah, like we were very young. We were like 22 and 21 years old. And we met through friends and we hanged for a summer and just, yeah. And from, I want to say like, start being together like 16 years ago. Yeah. And we started working together 15 years ago.
And you guys met, were you guys in college when you met?
Yeah.
And what were you guys studying at the time?
Graphic design.
Okay.
And at the time you were doing marketing.
I was in marketing at the time.
At the time.
Yeah.
And then what'd you do after that time?
I went to law school, like from when I was like a little less than 18 years old for 4 years. And I dropped off law school because I'm like, bro, this is not who I am. And then I went to marketing school and I was at marketing school. And then I, like around that time, I had to drop off school for a second time. So you know how you can be a college dropout? I'm two times.
Two-time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you'd be a two-time Olympic medalist.
Absolutely, bro.
Dropout.
Absolutely, bro.
I love it. You're not wrong. You can do that. So you born and raised in Mexico, both of you. You meet in Mexico. You go to school in Mexico. And eventually you graduate.
Yeah,
You don't end up graduating from college. But what do you guys do after you're done with college?
Well, before that, actually, when we were at school, Charlie has been always been like, what do we do? You know, like, mm-hmm. let's do something. So he had the idea of doing a like social content magazine.
Okay.
That was the first thing that we did. So he was like, okay, you're like a designer. Mm-hmm. I know marketing. Let's do like a magazine. Why not? So that's what we started. So when we, well, I graduated and everything, we already had the magazine. I think we already had the agency,
yeah.
right? Yeah.
The magazine, like, you know, it was like, I want to say like a door
mm-hmm.
to that led us to like understanding that we could make our own creative ideas like productive.
Okay.
Right. And right after it, because it lasted for like a year.
The magazine? Months,
yeah.
No, it was like I a year, to no. say more.
And you guys were interviewing, like you were going to social events.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Parties. It was like, because we did everything. So the covers were like famous people. We okay. started like with Nuestra Belleza Morelos. It okay. was the first one because we had friends that worked like in Televisa, Morelos and stuff. Okay. So they like help us with that.
Nuestra Belleza Morelos would be the person. It's a beauty pageant.
Like, it's a beauty pageant. Like, it's like the, Miss Morelos.
Yeah, yeah, like the beauty pageant.
That's funny,
from
no,
our
Ms.
home.
Morelos.
Yeah, exactly. And for instance, after that, we suddenly had Patti Cantú, Bolovan,
okay, wow.
Patricia Reyes Espíndola, like big names. And that's like how we also started being like in the entertainment business, because we did the interviews, we did some of the pictures, and then like the social content of the magazine or the publicity, we sold
the advertising.
The magazine. Yeah,
that's how you would make money.
Yeah, exactly.
Ads.
So
we
the
didn't make money, but that was a plan.
No, but it's just a very interesting thing. It broke even.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
From the first time, we're like, oh, wait, like, probably we can sell something that doesn't exist in reality. Like, that for me was, like, a big thing. It was like, bro, you can sell something that you don't have proof of. Mm-hmm. Because it was like that. The first time was like, just we'll just go out, sell to advertisers so we can pay for, like, literally the printing of yeah. what this costs or whatever.
So you have this magazine kind of during college, well, yeah. while you're finishing yeah. up, and then you start an agency mm-hmm. after that. What was the agency about? Was it creative agency?
Yeah.
And doing...
It was more of doing like marketing campaigns, designs.
We did a lot of whitelisting jobs.
Okay.
You know, we had a friend in Mexico at that point that was like, I want to say like 15 or 20 years older than us, probably. We're like 20, yeah, probably mm-hmm. 20 years old. Mm-hmm. And he had an agency in Mexico that serviced several brands.
Mm-hmm.
So we met and he was like, hey, why don't I send you like jobs?
Okay.
So we were whitelisting for his agency. And after it, we started having like our own like clients, like, you know, from, yeah, just businesses that were like, hey, can you design my logo?
Okay.
Exactly.
And whitelisting, for those of us not, that just means like someone is paying you to...
Like sub-hiring you, like... from their agencies, like,
see.
Oh, can you do this job? And then, yeah, for him, for his agency, let's
yeah.
say.
So you have all these clients, like steady work, it seems. And then at one point, you are asked to help out with a music festival
Correct.
In Guadalajara, mm-hmm. Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that music festival. What was it?
Okay, so we were hired at the beginning for all the branding
uh-huh.
because that was usually what we did, you know, like the branding, the marketing, like everything. And... this producer from Guadalajara, Mexico, like hired us to do all of that. But we like did everything, you know, like all the logistics backstage and things that
it turned into that.
Yeah, we had no idea how to do it.
So you thought you were just going to do like the design work.
Uh-huh.
When we started the agency, we had we had another partner, right? Mm-hmm. So it was like Paloma, Mario, they're our partner, and me. And Mario got approached by this guy in Guadalajara, like, hey, dude, I want to make this festival.
Mm-hmm.
So I want you guys to like the looks of it, uh-huh. the branding of it, the narrative of it. And we got hired to do it.
Okay.
It was messy and we ended up doing much more than we were like, I want to say like even much more than we knew how to do.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I think, our first like approach to, hey, this is like a live show with 7,000 people and 10 artists and it's a mess. So, you know.
Figure it out.
Yeah.
Figure it out. It was an experience of learning. It was a very quick, it was like a crash course.
So what goes into producing a festival, or back then at least? It was what, like logistics,
everything,
scheduling, sound?
Logistics, scheduling, sound,
food.
Lighting, your tutramoya, the people that is the production of the festival, food, caterings, hotels, transportation, the stuff that we were like, bro, I didn't know that. what am I? But yeah.
For me, I mean, even though it was like kind of messy and everything, we learned so much, you know, and that's actually how we started like to know the industry and everything. So it was a great experience.
I'm sure it was a really empowering experience, but I think I don't want to tell you what's an inflection point in your career. You know your career more than I do. But at that festival, you meet someone that will later become very crucial.
Well, it was like parallel with when this guy hired our agency to do everything for the mm-hmm. festival. We were also hired to work with this two bands, uh-huh. one girl band and one boy band. And it was like developing them, like
the image.
The image, exactly. Yeah, yeah. How they were going to yeah. be called, how they're like the looks, you know, everything. And there's where this okay. lady was. Yeah.
So you meet this young girl, teenager at
teenager.
That point.
Teenager,
14.
Bro. 14.
Yeah.
And her name is?
Sofia Reyes.
And it still is Sofia Reyes.
It yes. is.
So would you remember the first?
Until it's not. It changes right. to
exclusive. Yeah. So do you remember when you first saw her or met yeah. her? Like what about her stood out to you?
The first time that we saw her, it was like, okay, the girls are going to sing for you, you know? Mm-hmm. So we saw them and all of the girls were like super talented, mm-hmm. super nice girls. All, you know, these young girls with dreams. But there was something about her that, you know, was like different. And I remember perfectly that Charlie told me, he was like, this girl, like she's special, like she has something, you know, like he put a lot of attention. Like, obviously, I mean, a lot of develop was needed to do. But yeah. there he was like, you know, he saw like that thing that yeah. he can explain, like the artist thing, like the star thing. He saw it on her. So I was like, okay. And yeah.
What did you see? Like, can you put it in words?
I can describe it. See, right now, if you ask me, like, how do you understand, like, the power of an artist behind an artist beyond uh-huh. voice, whatever it is, right? There is, like a undescribable factor that you cannot, like, name. I don't know how mm. the X factor, you want to call it like right. that. The, I don't
know.
You know, like, yeah. Just that.
Okay.
Just that. They're like, yo, she's there's something about her, you know? Obviously, like, she sings well. And she has a, like this like thing, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But like, there's just something about some people that is compelling, and that is like this person probably has the capacity of connecting with people. Just mm-hmm. that. I'm.
So you meet this 14-year-old Sofia Reyes, and you connect with her father.
Yes, you know we obviously she was very young, and her dad was around a lot because she was very young. So we started hanging. Just chatting, and he asked me stuff, and I tell him stuff, and you know, and time passes, and we became friends, and we started just like chatting about like whatever it was, right?
So you were back in Mexico now, and you were working. I mean, you weren't completely new to the music industry at this point because you had the music festival, and then you start working concurrently with a band in Mexico City?
Yeah.
Or in Cuernavaca, in Mexico City?
Well, actually, they were based in Puebla.
They were based in Puebla, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think was kind of that same time because of the magazine, we started to meet a lot of people, you know, from the industry, and we became like friends with them, and they invited us to their, I don't know, music videos or stuff like that. So okay. just like starting to connect because it was like a passion of us, you know, like music, even though, I mean, not that I didn't know about it because I, you know, since I was born, I love music, but that I was going to actually live of that or whatever. So I think because Charlie started meeting producers and stuff, and then this band in Puebla that they were like friend of ours were super interested, like, hey, can we work together? Because I think there's things that you can do for us, blah, blah. So that's how we started working with them, you know? Okay. Yeah.
And then, so Charlie, you saw both of you at this point see this potential in Sofia, yeah. and you say, oh man, like she could be something.
Yeah.
You meet the dad, time passes. Do you call him? He calls you? Like, when do you guys decide, like, let's do something?
So he calls.
Uh-huh.
He's like, hey, Charlie, what are you guys doing? I'm like, dude, we have the agency and blah, blah. He's like, Sofia's out of the group now.
Okay.
And we don't really, like, know how to continue to assist her to pursue her career. Like, I don't know. I'm like, dude, we want to move to LA and do our thing. Like, probably this could be the first time we do. And we start working on Sofia's project. Like, he's like, okay, let's look into it. And for the next, like, year and a half or something like that, right?
Yeah, it was, yeah, more than...
We worked on it in Mexico.
Okay.
Like, preparing, like, okay, how do we make this a reality?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And at that time, too, this was, what, 2011? 10 or 11.
Yeah.
Justin Bieber was huge by this point. Mm-hmm. And yeah. You kind of had this blueprint for, like, how to create, I think, like, a grassroots artist almost. Like, yeah. An artist created by the people. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Justin Bieber was discovered online by his manager, yeah. YouTube. Mm-hmm. And I think it kind of did really change how we think of the world. So you guys start making YouTube covers with Sophia.
It's funny that you mentioned that because one of the things that makes it plausible in my mind was his movie.
Never Say Never.
Never Say Never. We started the documentary. We started we saw Never Say Never at a very particular time.
That was part of like the plan that we had with Sophia was like, okay, let's start doing like covers on YouTube. Let's start doing original music and then we'll pitch with labels, you know. But he definitely was like an inspiration, like, you know, his career, how he did it. Like, it was a huge inspiration for
and
us.
At the same time, while he may be a blueprint, Sophia was also a very different musical product. Yeah. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Not only is she a woman, but she's also Mexican. Mm-hmm. She's perfectly bilingual in both languages. So you're in a different playing field, in a different demographic. So what was your strategy with her? Like, once beyond the covers and you start making original music, what was that original music like?
No, you know something? It was like just like natural, like putting her in the studio with this like amazing producers that it was a blessing that we, you know, had that connection because it's not like something that happens just to upcoming artists, you know, like going with these people. But then like melodies and then she started singing like in English. So we're like, you know something? If it's natural, let's do it. We're Mexicans and in Mexico, it's also normal to listen to music in English. So let's go like with whatever feels right. Okay. Like that song feels good in English, let's do it in English. Or bilingual, we started doing songs like back and forth in Spanglish. And even though there were a lot of people like telling us like, oh, that's not going to work, blah, blah. We're like, you know, it feels good. It feels natural. And the way the song sounds, it feels good. So let's just do it, you know, without rules. That was the thing. Like we weren't following any rules. Okay. Whatever felt just right for us.
It should be like that.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, when I mentioned like a blueprint, I think you can see something as an inspiration, and specifically in the music business. I don't think it's possible to grab anyone's like career, like case study, to put it in a way, right? As a blueprint. I think it's an avenue of creativity that you just allow to happen and you believe in it, right? I think with Sophia, like it was about like, hey, we believe she can do this. We believe we can do this. Let's surround this with the best that we can creative-wise and let's see what happens with that. I don't even think that we had like an expectation or like this is going to happen because in reality, you don't know.
Yeah. So you have Sophia, you guys are working with her. You moved to LA and you guys are living in the same apartment. We have 26, 27-year-old Paloma, Charlie, and then Sophia is how old at this point?
She 15, was, 16? I think she just turned 8. No, she was 17.
17.
And then she turned 18 here. We're already, working with Sarah, that she's here.
Sarah
is a good dear friend of ours. We met her 10 years ago, but she's also our publicist
through Twitter.
That's another amazing story, you know.
Okay.
But let me go back to what you were asking. Sophia was 17, but she was literally a kid, you know, coming from Mexico and moving with us. So we were like, obviously, she's not going to live alone. So let's live all of us together. So we became like a family real quick. And we're like, okay, another year together. Okay, another one. And so that was 5 years because we were so comfortable. She's such like an easygoing person to live with. And, you know, it was like a little family. So we were like, okay, you know, this works. So, yeah.
And then when you're in LA, like, do you start recording here? Do you start taking meetings? Like, how do you build a pop star?
Yeah. This videos that you're describing, right? We shot them.
Okay.
You know, we were like, why don't we make a cover of this song? We learned to do things that we didn't know how to do, like shooting a cover for and recording everything.
We had no idea how to do anything.
Like shooting, editing, everything. Like
recording us, vocals. I'm going to record vocals.
Charlie recording vocals, putting everything online. And you're saying, how do you build like a pop star? But that was like 10, 11 uh-huh. years ago. I think right now things would be totally different, you know? Because when we started with Sophia, I think Instagram was starting. Uh-huh. So, yeah, you know, it was totally like different. But what we did was doing all these covers on YouTube that they started to go really well. On Facebook, that was like
okay.
social, yeah. like media actually started to gain like, you okay. know, traction and everything. And then
the fact that we were around like the most in the strangers was yeah. a big thing for us.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Why? Because it was also giving us like around them at that point, Lex Borrero, which is now the head of Neon 16, mm-hmm. was their manager.
Okay.
Right? So well now, you know, we were existing like in an environment that also like allows you to like ask, you know, like to uh-huh. be like, oh dude, like probably we should do a video about it and have people around to be like, oh yeah or no, you can okay. do this. So I want to say like that was like a huge like it was a big thing for us, having that environment that it starts to like solve you, answer things that you don't know. It was a big thing, and they were like a big part of it, like the Monster and the Strangers, and those first songs that we had with them,
uh-huh.
which videos that we shot like internally too. The second song that we put out, and this is an inflection point, like uh-huh. I'm glad I like that inflection point thing. We got a call from like the at that point the head of like MTV Latin America,
uh-huh.
and he's like, "Hey, you guys work with this girl, like Sophia?" I'm like, "Yeah." Like, how about this video? So beautiful. I love that. Like, okay. Like, can we nominate it for like something
on wow. MTV?
Yeah, it was one of those things. It just like aligned, you know. And at that point, we were like Paloma, me, and Sara.
And at the time, yeah, that's what I was gonna say. So we're like, okay, you know, like we're doing this on social media, starting to do this music. We're like, okay, but we need to put her out there. How people also is gonna start like seeing her. And at the time, Diego Boneta moved to LA uh-huh. as well. Like he was doing like Rock of Ages. Isa Gonzalez just moved here. So we're like,
Mexican actors.
Yes.
Very talented.
So we're like, but they're Mexican born and raised. And we're like, okay, those are Mexicans doing great things uh-huh. here. We also, you know, want to do that. So they were also like, you know, big like people that we were like, okay, we need to do also this. And we saw on Twitter
uh-huh.
that Diego was working with Sarah Duru. And literally Charlie just like sent a DM.
On Twitter, what's yeah. up, dude? Like,
yeah.
you know, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, and I know then it was funny talking to Sarah, you know, like receiving like a DM, haha, and everything. But that's how we connected with her. And she loved the project and she trusted it. She was also starting with our agency. So she was like part of it. And like we started doing everything. Yeah.
And I want to go back to what you said earlier. Yeah. You said that, was it executives or people in the industry when you said we were going to maybe do even Spanglish
yeah.
or English and Spanish? What exactly were they saying?
He had that conversation. So.
Oh yeah,
it was executives. Yeah, but look, at that point, and this is 10 years ago. Uh-huh. 10 years yeah. ago now, Jesus, yeah. oh my God, 10 years ago. So I think at that point, the way I you know, I had a conversation with an executive that I really like, respect, and I think it's cool and everything. He's like, dude, you can't do Spanglish. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, you're gonna ruin her career, literally. And I'm like, no, why?
Uh-huh.
And he's like, dude, because people is not gonna accept it.
Okay.
People in Mexico is gonna accept it. People in the US is not gonna accept it. I'm like, oh. And I understood like what he was telling me came from a place of like, my environment probably is not gonna accept it. Uh-huh. But I also understood years later, it's like, but that's not the environment that we're aiming for, right? Mm-hmm. What you see as something that is not possible is exactly what's going out there in the streets, out there in the borders,
uh-huh.
out there in LA, bro. Like, yeah.
But,
so
yeah, and I want to add to that then thinking about this, I mean, it was a guy that he was like, you know, mm-hmm. in a label, so they have to go for the safe uh-huh. yeah. things. So, you know, they usually don't like to, or I don't know yeah. right now, but like to break like boundaries or stuff. Like, no one was doing that. I mean, there was like Yellow, Ricky Martin, blah, blah, but it wasn't like the regular common thing or like for a young new artist. So it was like, no, like, why are you going to do something that no one else is doing? For us, it was a gut feeling. It felt good. It sounded good. So we're like, you know, let's risk it. Let's do it. And the first song that we did Spanglish was Muévelo with Wisin. That it was a huge like song. It was like a breaking point on Sofia's career, which actually was her first single with Warners, because we joined venture with them after. And we're like, okay, it's working.
So that's 2014, right?
Yeah.
When that's released. You've been in LA for how long at that point?
2 years now.
2 years. And how does the single even happen with Wisin? I mean, that's a huge name to be with.
It was Warner's. It was a team that we had at that moment with the label, the situation that we had that label at, that with the label at that moment. I think it was our first try of hey, we have a powerful label partner possibility.
Okay.
You know, because before that it was like, oh, I was figuring out. That was something that led on the label side, on our team side, it came like the possibility, why don't we record something with Wisin?
When we started working with Warners, I do have to say, like, the president at that time, Iñigo Zabala.
Yeah.
He was there, he was the president for 30 years or something. And when we started working with them, he always was, like, super, super supportive with Sophia. And he trusted a lot, like, the project, her vision. He trusted us a lot. So he was like, I want to be part of what you're already doing. Yeah. So he was, like, a huge, like... player on blessing, her career, right? Blessing.
The guy was a huge blessing for us.
So since then, everything that we did with Warner's, I think he was there until, I think, 2 years ago. He was there 8 years with us. Uh-huh. He was amazing, and he did everything he could on his power as a label. So we're super thankful, you know, with them. Yeah.
So I don't want to say what's an inflection point, but I imagine the Muevelo we've seen was an inflection point.
Yes, surprisingly.
Why surprisingly?
Because... not surprisingly, a surprising inflection point in how it happened. Because when we released the song, it started getting traction. Uh-huh. It started going well. And then we went to Spain, like on a promotion thing. They're like, hey, you got to come to Spain. We have like this, like 40 Principales concert here and there. And Sophia, I remember it perfectly. We were like in Spain, songs out there, like it's going well. And you feel it going well, right? Uh-huh. She walks on a stage in Spain. It's like probably 10,000 people, something like that.
Well, in Madrid, it was like 10,000. In Barcelona, it was like 30,000 people.
Like, oh,
and
wow.
Everyone was singing the song so loud.
We didn't know that was
happening.
Well,
they knew it. Oh,
they knew that.
We had no idea like that was happening. So it was like a huge thing,
None of us knew that was happening.
No.
Like Sophia Blum and me, like, we were like, bro, like, what? Like, you have like thousands, tens of thousands of people going like, Muevelo. I'm like, what? Like,
yeah.
That was an inflection point for us.
Yeah.
And it was a Spanglish song.
Too. It was a Spanglish song, bro. Yeah. And this is Spain too.
Yeah.
It was a Spanglish song. Uh-huh. Super Spanglish song.
I got you.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
I want to hear more about how you guys capitalize on that momentum that you build after Muevelo. Mm-hmm. But I want to open it up to questions from other people.
Yeah.
In each episode of Business School, we ask small businesses from all over the country to submit their questions for our guests. The first question is from a design studio in California.
Hey, y'all. My name is China, and I'm the founder at Monforte Studio. What considerations do you think about when you're setting your annual budget?
Look, this is business school, so like let's play it like that too. I think it's important that you understand what are the main needs of your business, mm-hmm. and you prioritize them, right? There's a business misconception, a big misconception in the creative business. What's a priority and what's not?
Okay.
What is the basics that we need for our creatives to have an environment where they can shine? Mm-hmm. You know, because you need to pay attention to your core, to your bread and butter. There's a lot of things out there that they look confusing, and this, you know, in their tenant business, like, should I need an $11,000 computer? Probably not.
Okay.
You know, who's behind a computer? How do you feed that person's creativity correctly? Mm-hmm. Because you might not need an $11,000 computer. You might need a $1,000 computer, and you might need to put $9,000 behind your creatives.
I see.
You know, like, to me, it's like, you got to find, like, what's the cornerstone of your business.
All right, our next question is from a Comcast Rise recipient. So Comcast Rise supports the growth of all small businesses and individuals committed to uplifting their communities. In almost 3 years, Comcast Rise has awarded more than $125 million in monetary marketing and technology grants to businesses all over the United States. So this question is from a business in Baltimore.
Hi, my name's Ann Costlow. I am the founder of Sophie's Crepes in Baltimore. We sell sweet and savory crepes to the Baltimore, Severna Park, and Annapolis area. I'm thinking of adding a partner to my business, and I'm wondering what your advice would be for creating a successful, trusting, and lasting partnership for my business.
For me, it's like trusting a person. You know, like you have to trust like your life to them because, well, for us, our business is like our life, our baby. So it has to be someone that you trust and you share values with. Mm-hmm. Obviously, have something. For me, what has worked a lot with Charlie has been that he has something that I definitely don't have. And I think vice versa. So someone that complements also the business. Because if you have someone that does exactly what you do, then you know what they're going to add. So I think that's one of the things, the trust. And yeah, like sharing the same values, because it has happened to us also, like we've worked with other people, not in a partnership, but for me, when you manage or work with other people, kind of is like a partnership, you know, in a way. So you have to definitely have same values, because, well, that's super important. Like in when you take decisions and choices and stuff, like you need to be in the same like
wavelength.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to your story now. Yes. Where
send some crepes.
We're send some crepes, please.
Please.
Whatever flavor, we'll take it. Actually, so funny you mentioned it. I'm kidding.
Actually, we have crepes.
Check under your chair. No, don't check. Well. We'll just find cables. So we're at this point in your career, Sofia's career, where you have thousands of people in Spain singing word for word of a song that she sings with Wisin. What do you do with that momentum? What's next?
So before that, the thing is like we did a music camp, so we had a lot of great songs. So we were just like, okay, the next step would be put more music, you know, let's keep going and going. And yeah, that's what we did, you know, like we released another song and then another song and just keep building and building like. But priority like that, it was like, what's the best song to put out next, you know? Yeah.
So you release all these singles. Eventually, though, you release an album.
Yeah.
So I've never produced an album, if you can tell. Mm-hmm. But I imagine there's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of things to take care of, legal situations. How do you do that? How do you produce an album? Tell me.
Wow. I mean, there's a musical side that it's like the fun part, you know, like going to the studio and, you know, like developing the sound and then having all the songs. But then you do like a bunch of songs. So it's deciding which one's going to be part of it. So obviously the singles that you already release, which ones other, you know, make sense with the artist, with what we want to put out, blah, blah. And then the not so fun part for us, at least, is all the paperwork, because each person, you know, like involved in each song has to have a release. But you also have like the label that they kind of support with that as well.
But with the first album, Louder, how was that received?
Amazing. La verdad, honestly, super blessed, because since the first single that was Muévelo and then Rest of Your Life, Solo Yo with Prince Royce, Llegaste Tú.
It was like hit after hit.
Hit after it hit. Yeah, thankfully people accepted it really well. So the whole album went amazing, you know? Mm-hmm. Like it was really, really
there's cool. One song in that album, Llegaste Tú, that, because again, you don't know what's going to happen to the song, right? It became a wedding song in Mexico. It became like the first, like, what do we say?
The first dance.
The first dance. It became the first dance for a bunch of people in Mexico.
Yeah.
We had a Billboard number one with Prince Royce with that. We had a Billboard number one in the US. We had a couple of gold records with Wisin on Muévelo. We had like a couple of other gold records with Llegaste Tú and Raycon. Like,
Sofia got nominated for the Latin Grammys as Best, new artist. Also around that time.
And she won.
Not the Latin Grammy.
Not yet.
I have it here. She was Female Artist of the Year for the Latin American Music Awards.
Yes.
In 2019. Okay.
With Rita Ora and Anita.
After her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay, before we get to 2019, The song you mentioned, Los Tres, that's with Jason Derulo.
And De La Ghetto.
How do you get a song with Jason Derulo and De La Ghetto?
Okay.
You dream about it.
It was a song that was first, it was made by John Leone, Ricky Montaner, Sofia, Nicole Ciniego, and Charlie. They were at the studio doing it without pretentious or anything. And Charlie, mostly because I wouldn't say us, but Charlie, he was like, okay, this song is huge. It has great potential. And they, I think at the beginning it was all in Spanish and they started Spanglish. And honestly, Charlie had the idea. He was like, let's put Jason Derulo.
It was a funny thing, dude, because this is, at that point, Ricky Montaner, John Leon, were living here in LA, right? This is obviously Ricky Montaner, that now is one of the huge Latin artists, amazing songwriter, and John Leon, one of the biggest Latin producers right now, right? And they goes you gotta listen to this song. Come to the studio, you gotta listen to this song. We're like, okay, you gotta listen to the song, right? And we're like,
oh, so
this is awesome. This is awesome. I'm like, should this Spanglish about it?
Okay.
And it was it was a discussion about it, and they're like, okay, let's do the Spanglish version. If this Spanglish version, I'm like, dude, Jason Derulo would be perfect for it. And I tell them, and I tell Sophie, I'm gonna bring Jason Derulo to this song. And literally, dude, without knowing how. And I embarked on the journey of bringing Jason to the song.
Yeah.
Literally, it was.
I need to do a parenthesis here. All of our features, mostly all of them have been like that.
Really?
Let's have this person and Charlie contacts them and it happens.
Less and less. Yeah, because with Sophie now it's oh, dude, do you want to jump into my song?
Of course.
It's a two-way street now.
But,
yes.
Yeah, but that has been and I want to say it because it's wow, because for us it was and how do we connect to Jason? So Charlie got his manager's email or
I'm gonna tell how it happened. So I went and told the president of Warner's hey, Jason Derulo, he's but it's gonna be heavy, whatever. And I asked another guy at Warner's, which was he told me, Inigo told me, but you can ask Stu. Stu Bergen at that time was the president of International for Warner's.
Okay.
I went to New York, sat down with Stu. And this is me in this giant office, right? And I'm yo, Stu, can you help me get Jason Derulo on the record? And he's like, no. Literally, he's like, no. Very real guy.
Thanks for asking.
these guys that I'm mentioning you, they're being huge inspirations to me. And they opened many doors. He's like, no, but I can do something. Okay. I can connect you with his manager and you can just try to do it.
Okay.
I'm like, that's all I need, bro. Uh-huh. Literally, at that point, he's like, connects me, blah, 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 blah. And I start talking with his manager on email a couple of times. And I tell him, can I call you? Uh-huh. He's like, yeah, call me. And I call him and I tell him, look, bro, this song, I think it's incredible. And I think it's huge. I think it is going to be I don't know what to tell you, bro. And I also cannot tell you. And I told him, I cannot tell you what's going to happen with it. But I promise you, I will do everything in my power to make this song big.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, let me talk with Jason. Straight up, right? Talks with Jason. Calls me back, Jason is in. I'm like, okay. In the process of the song, I had the opportunity, we had the opportunity of getting close to Jason. And I understood this was an inflection point in the way I listened to music. Uh-huh. He told me, I think this song is smash, Charlie. So I wanted to know who was behind it to make sure that wasn't gonna happen. But I think from the when I listened to the song, I'm like, I wanna be in this song. Literally was that. Fast forward to, and it was a process.
A year.
A year later.
Oh, okay.
Because the label wasn't convinced about it. There's 80 versions of the song. It changed so much. Then we brought Tiny, that is this huge Latin producer, of course, one of the biggest ones in the history of music.
Yeah.
Tiny also helped there. We brought another friend that was a DJ, Latin, Mexican. We're like, we need that sauce to make it that cumbia, more street, because he's from that.
From Mexico, look.
So he helped with those cumbia beats. And then, obviously, we're okay, to bring that urban Spanish thing, De La Ghetto as well.
So we brought back the song with Jason and Inigo, the person, were oh, why don't we bring De La Ghetto on it?
Okay.
I'm like, okay, let's have him cut it. Shout out to the Laghetto, one of the best. He murdered that song.
Yeah,
he's one of those. He's also a very dear, a great Latin artist. Amazing songwriter. And that's how you end up with Un, Dos, Tres. A year later.
Wow.
A year later, it was a lot. Yeah,
And then, okay, so what strikes me about this song specifically is that I think it's fascinating to hear a song on mainstream American radio that says, if you want to turn it on, go get a light bulb, después hablamos. Like, seamlessly transitioning from English to Spanish. If you want to turn it, I'm going to stop because then I'll start singing. But if you want to turn it on, go get a lighter, después bailamos.
Yeah.
Like, what did that feel like for you guys to have such a massive hit? And you guys had a really awesome part.
Chills.
Yeah, really.
Sometimes I don't even, you know, you have to step back to see, because it was last year, I think, the biggest Latin song on TikTok, like had like more than 7 million like videos and everything. And I mean, we released it, I think it was 2018. So still, you know, it keeps going and going.
It continues to
give. Yeah. So, I mean, super blessed. And obviously saying like all the hard work paid off, because it was a lot of work. But I mean, also that happens with other songs that you work so hard and they don't go that well. But with this one, I think it just connected with the people. People loved it. It was synchronized with a lot of like
it pushed
commercials
the lines.
And yeah. I think
what you're saying
it was
right
a
now.
Breaking point in music. Like a lot of people, a lot of artists tell us like they were inspired for that song. Yeah.
This is one of the first biggest Spanglish song.
Yeah.
Right? Like at that point it was like
I think at the same time, Despacito with Justin Bieber happened, and
It was
stress. It was just like those two mainly.
It was like what you're saying is like, how do you end up? What's your feel on like having this on U.S. radio? Like, dude, like culturally, number one, which is like to me, it's like, bro, this is culturally so giant, and that song is culturally so giant. You know, friends that we have across the world, they're like, oh yeah, they're playing till right now. They're playing No Stress in the restaurant in Japan or in whatever. It became the cultural thing, right? I think is with songs, specifically with songs, there's like sometimes the stars aligned with, and I think that song has just literally the way it was created no one had an expectation behind it. Everyone was just like oh, this is cool to be a part of, let's do it.
It's a cool sound. It's very
like
cool.
Those lyrics right now that you read the lyrics, I'm like, yeah, of course, bro. Look at the songwriters that you have behind it. You have Sofia, you have Ricky, you have Nicole. Like, this is songwriters that became like such giant songwriters, right? It's a blessing to be a part of stuff like that.
Yeah, now it's so like commonplace, you know, to have. I feel like if you listen to it in Japan and you hear this song, I wouldn't be surprised if some people think of it as an American song. It is an American song.
Yeah.
But some people could also see it, oh, it's a Mexican song or it's a Latin American song. Yeah. But it's a song.
It's a song.
Great. So awesome momentum that you've been able to capitalize on. And, you know, the rest is kind of history. But you eventually decide to start Myth Media.
Yeah.
When did you guys start Myth Media? And can you tell us what Myth stands for?
Yeah, actually, it was, I think, before that. It was like 2014, 2015. Because obviously with Sofia, it's been great. And our focus was there and everything. But and being with Charlie, because he's always... What else? What more can we do? He doesn't settle with anything.
So not anymore right now. I'm maturing at that
You're
side. I'm trying to mature because it's also like not sustainable to be.
Yeah, but at that time, obviously, like we're younger and it was like, what else can we do? So it was like, let's create also, you know, the company Myth Media to work with more artists, more songs, blah, blah. And Myth means...
Makes us in the house.
When we wanted to move to LA, one of the things... and when we decided to do things with Sofia here, we were like, we want to put Mexico in the map. We want to do things so big that people in the U.S. would want to be like, oh, my God, I want to be Mexican, you know.
Little we knew
that
when we move here, bro, we're going to culturally crash into an extension of Mexico.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
We didn't know that.
Welcome to LA.
Exactly.
Same thing. Welcome to Mexico, bro.
Yeah.
When people arrive here, I'm like, welcome to Mexico. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, exactly that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So that's why we decided calling the company Myth.
I love it.
Yeah.
I think that the years that we start being here, the first year that we start being here, it gave us like a lot of visibility into that community. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, wait, it's not only us in Mexico trying to this and trying to that. It's kids here too, bro. It's kids here that they're in the search of like, to find their identity as Mexican-American, as Mexas. Mm-hmm. They speak Spanish, bro. There's people here who speak Spanish that wasn't speaking Spanish at that time. They were like, so yeah. I think it just aligned like that. Also, it happened at the same time where like on film, you had the rise of Guillermo del Toro becoming
Iñárritu.
Of Iñárritu.
Yeah.
of Cuarón.
Yeah.
Right? So it was like all of this happening at the same time.
We're
like,
cultural. Yeah, yeah. Cultural moments. And
yeah. Yes.
Totally.
It began there. Uh-huh. Right now, like 10 years later, it's a...
Totally.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's such a beautiful moment.
Yeah, we're so happy to see all this, you know, like kids doing like Mexican music and doing so well. We're I'm proud to say like, oh, we're part of that wave and also, you know, opening this like doors.
What I really like about your story too is that now it seems you're in a much different place than when you were when you first arrived to LA. And I think you've used that stability to spread some good as well through Human X. Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about that project?
Human X is a project that happened mid-pandemic. Mm-hmm. Pandemic was weird. And I think for everyone, it was...
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
Exactly.
That was weird for you. You forgot about it. You're like, the moment it ended, you're like, no, delete.
It was very weird.
It was very weird, bro. And I started like getting a lot of like... I got very sensible about like, hey, you know, all of the Mexicans that were in the U.S., you have these people here and that people there, and you have all of the day laborers here. Uh-huh. They're not being benefited by any like federal program. Like, you know, mid-pandemic, when in the U.S. you had like, oh yeah, we're going to send you $7 to your house, whatever it is, bro. These people are not getting those $7 or $70 or $700. They're not getting this. They're screwed. Mm-hmm. No one's paying attention to them, right? And they can't stop working. Mm-hmm. Because if they stop working, yeah, they don't eat. But we don't eat either. And I was having a conversation with a friend, with Lex Borrado, actually, mm-hmm. on the phone. Literally, I'm going to tell you the story as it is. I had this conversation with him, like, yo, I need your help. Mm-hmm. He's like, what do you need, bro? Like, I think we should do something. I want to do a nonprofit so we can put art, music, at the service of, like, charity, at the service of, like, human causes. I don't know. Like, we should do something. Like, and he's like, what do you want to do? I'm like, why don't we do a song? And I'm doing the song, la, 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 la. Why don't we like donate everything that it makes? It's like, okay. And let's donate everything that this song makes to the NDLO, the National Day Labor Organization, okay. Right? Like literally, we're going to do it like that. Okay, cool. So I go and I play this song for, and this is a great thing, I play this song for David Guetta.
Okay.
And he's like, I like this song. What's your plan with it? I'm like, well, I want to donate everything that it makes. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, I have this idea, la, 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 yada, yada. What do you think about it? And he told me, I'm in.
Wow.
Just that dude. He was the first artist that he's like, I'm in. So I'm like, well, so now if we have David Guetta, then we went and got like Manuel Turizo. And obviously having, when I'm talking with Lex, and Human X is something that happened like this. And we, and you know, it's shared between like Lex Borrero, Tiny, Tommy Mottola, and me.
And how much did that first song generate?
Obviously, all the platforms love like the concept. Like
several hundred thousand bucks.
Facebook, wow. Spotify, yeah. Everyone was like, oh my God, yes. Yeah, so bro. They also, that's you know, huge. Put the spotlight on the song. So it made a lot of money. So that's awesome. Yeah.
Very cool.
And yeah. It's for them always. I told them like, dude, like, we're
forever.
Not going to like, you're like,
touching it.
We're not going to touch it because we wouldn't do it with that purpose, right?
Yeah, so the plan like is that. To do another song and then, you know, to choose something else that's and to cool. keep going.
Yeah.
So that's Human X.
And an I'm educational super, program that we're going to do next year.
Oh, I'm super okay. proud.
I'll tell you about it when it's ready.
Okay, yeah.
I'm super proud because it's, that came from Charlie, you know, like through the pandemic, he was like, we need to help, even though people were like struggling and trying to see how they help themselves.
Yeah.
It was like, how can we help other people through art, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But I do have to tell you, I love you. Thank you for saying that. Through that, I also helped myself. Okay. Again, pandemic was very, for me, it was brutal, bro. Like mental health-wise was really heavy for me.
Yeah.
And I think I found that purpose, daily purpose on like, how do we connect and help other people? And that helped me a lot. Make sense?
Yeah, no,
yeah.
Totally. Well, I want to end with some rapid fire questions.
No,
to ask, although I guess
we're done.
Well, almost. These are rapid fire, but they're a little long. So bear with me, both of you. Try to do it as quickly as you can. But what's your earliest money memory?
Okay, mine is I think around 6 years old. Suddenly, there's no money in my house. So it's what are we going to do? My mom has to work. So now the cars that we had, we don't have them. So since then, it's always been like a thing in my head. Like, okay, like how can we live, you know, day by day and stuff. So that's like my first like memory of mine.
Charlie.
I paid a lot of attention to money since I was very young.
Okay. Okay.
Because money was a big issue in my house. Okay. Like, it generated a lot of familiar issues, like stuff. It generated an environment that wasn't great to like, literally. I was 6 years old, and I'm like the same, and I'm like, bro, this is not great. Like, my mom and dad were fighting a lot for money because it was a struggle. It was a daily struggle. So that's my first memory of it.
Okay, what's the worst business advice you've ever received?
For me, it's more than an advice. I saw it, and it's like spending everything you have on one thing and without saving or without having like a projection for a year or something. You know, I've seen so many things around me that people like spend everything they have. Like, here's a paycheck. Okay, let's buy this. Let's do this. And then, you know, with what you buy a car, but then how you're going to put gas on it. So I think that's like the worst advice I want to say, like spend everything you have, you know, without like saving and having like a plan.
For the future.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, you know, the worst, it had two sides. A guy told me your major flaw is that you get too emotionally involved to your business. And I think it's a big advice. I don't think it was the right advice for me because I think that's one of my biggest like assets. Mm-hmm. I think the right advice was like learn to manage how to get involved. Like, right? The best advice that I've gotten, best, and I'd say to every one of my artists, creatives, everyone, bro, don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Don't drink the Kool-Aid, bro. Like, you know, an entertainment in this, like in anything, when you start having just a little bit of success, there's people like, drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
When you drink the Kool-Aid, you lose your ground. You lose your center. You lose your purpose. Don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I agree on that one. And I don't think only on entertainment. I think in life, if you just, you know, in Mexico, we say, te subes al ladrillo, you know, a little bit, and then poof, like you lose the ground, and everything that you work for and everything can like suddenly from 1 minute to another change. So that's a big advice, like never drink the Kool-Aid.
Drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stay grounded.
Yeah, exactly. Totally.
Last question. Who else should we have as a guest lecturer? So like a guest on business school and why?
I have a friend. This guy would be amazing too. He is the owner of Tacos 1986.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Big shout out, Victor Delgado. Yeah. Cool. I saw that guy going from coming to here, putting a taco stand, and now he has like 8.
Anyone, you know, that comes from nothing, I want to say, that builds their own company in any, like, you know, like
industry.
Exactly.
Yeah, bro.
But I think those type of people would be really interesting, you know, to talk to, because it's a story about, you know, like working hard and how they manage to do their business.
Anyone can inspire you, you know, in a way.
Exactly.
You know, I think when you're someone that sounds like you, looks like you, whatever it is, doing something that dream, just makes it plausible for you.
Yeah. If you can, I mean, it sounds cheesy. If you can see it, you can believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's not cheesy. It's real. Yeah. Because you're like, oh, wait, this is, that person is me.
Mm-hmm.
So I can also like dream like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's a great sentiment to end on.
Yeah.
Thank you guys, Paloma, Charlie, for stopping by Business School. Really appreciate it.
Hey, it's Fernando. If you like this episode, go back and subscribe to get notified when new episodes drop. And if you really, really like the episode, make sure to leave a review. It helps others find the most affordable business school out there right now, Business School. Thanks for listening.